"Do you think that you and I are equals?" he asked in a sharp voice. His question caught me off guard. I experienced a peculiar buzzing in my ears as though he had actually shouted his words, which he hadn't done. However, there had been a metallic sound in his voice that was reverberating in my ears. I scratched the inside of my left ear with the small finger of my left hand. My ears itched all the time, and I had developed a rhythmical nervous way of rubbing the inside of them with the small finger of either hand. The movement was more properly a shake of my whole arm. Don Juan watched my movements with apparent fascination.
"Well, are we equals?"
he asked. "Of course we're equals," I said. I was, naturally, being condescending. I felt very warm towards him, even though at times I didn't know what to do with him. Yet I still held in the back of my mind, although I would never voice it, the belief that I, being a university student, a man of the sophisticated Western world, was superior to an Indian.
"No," he said calmly. "We are not."
"Why, certainly we are," I protested.
"No," he said in a soft voice. "We're not equals. I am a hunter and a warrior, and you are a pimp."
My mouth fell open. I couldn't believe that Don Juan had actually said that. I dropped my notebook and stared at him dumbfoundedly, and then, of course, I became furious. He looked at me with calm and collected eyes. I avoided his gaze. And then he began to talk. He enunciated his words clearly. They poured out smoothly and deadly. He said that I was pimping for someone else. That I wasn't fighting my own battles, but the battles of some unknown people. That I didn't want to learn about plants or about hunting or about anything. And that his world of precise acts and feelings and decisions was infinitely more effective than the blundering idiocy I called my life. After he finished talking, I was numb. He'd spoken without belligerence or conceit, but with such power and yet such calmness that I wasn't even angry anymore. We remained silent. I felt embarrassed and couldn't think of anything appropriate to say. I waited for him to break the silence. Hours went by. Don Juan became motionless by degrees until his body had acquired a strange, almost frightening rigidity. His silhouette became difficult to make out as it got dark, and finally, when it was pitch black around us, he seemed to have merged into the blackness of the stones. His state of motionlessness was so total that it was as if he didn't exist any longer. It was midnight when I finally realized that he could and would stay motionless there in that wilderness, in those rocks. Perhaps forever, if he had to. His world of precise acts and feelings and decisions was indeed superior. I quietly touched his arms, and tears flooded me. 7. Being Inaccessible. Thursday, June 29th, 1961. Again, Don Juan, as he had done every day for nearly a week, held me spellbound with his knowledge of specific details about the behavior of game. He first explained and then corroborated a number of hunting tactics based on what he called the quirks of quails. I became so utterly involved in his explanations that a whole day went by, and I hadn't noticed the passage of time. I even forgot to eat lunch. Don Juan made joking remarks that it was quite unusual for me to miss a meal. By the end of the day, he had caught 5 quail in a most ingenious trap, which he had taught me to assemble and set up.
2 are enough for us, he said, and let 3 of them loose.
He then taught me how to roast quail. I had wanted to cut some shrubs and make a barbecue pit, the way my grandfather used to make it, lined with green branches and leaves and sealed with dirt. But Don Juan said that there was no need to injure the shrubs. since we had already injured the quail. After we finished eating, we walked very leisurely towards a rocky area. We sat on a sandstone hillside, and I said jokingly that if he would have left the matter up to me, I would have cooked all five of the quail, and that my barbecue would have tasted much better than his roast.
"No doubt," he said. "But if you would have done all that, we might have never left this place in one piece."
"What do you mean?" I asked. "What would have prevented us?"
"The shrubs, the quail, everything around would have pitched in."
"I never know when you're talking seriously," I said. He made a gesture of feigned impatience and smacked his lips.
"You have a weird notion of what it means to talk seriously," he said. "I laugh a great deal because I like to laugh, yet everything I say is deadly serious, even if you don't understand it. Why should the world be only as you think it is? Who gave you the authority to say so?"
"There's no proof that the world is otherwise," I said. It was getting dark. I was wondering if it was time to go back to his house, but he didn't seem to be in a hurry, and I was enjoying myself. The wind was cold. Suddenly, he stood up and told me that we had to climb to the hilltop and stand up on an area clear of shrubs.
"Don't be afraid," he said. "I'm your friend, and I'll see that nothing bad happens to you."
"What do you mean?" I asked, alarmed. Don Juan had the most insidious facility to shift me from sheer enjoyment to sheer fright.
"The world is very strange at this time of the day," he said. "That's what I mean. No matter what you see, don't be afraid."
"What am I going to see?"
"I don't know yet," he said, peering into the distance towards the south.
He didn't seem to be worried. I also kept on looking in the same direction. Suddenly, he perked up and pointed with his left hand toward a dark area in the desert shrubbery.
"There it is," he said, as if he had been waiting for something which had suddenly appeared.
"What is it?" I asked.
"There it is," he repeated. "Look, look!"
I didn't see anything, just the shrubs.
"It's here now," he said with great urgency in his voice. "It is here."
A sudden gust of wind hit me at that instant and made my eyes burn. I stared towards the area in question. There was absolutely nothing out of the ordinary.
"I can't see a thing," I said. "You just felt it," he replied. "Right now, it got into your eyes and kept you from seeing."
"What are you talking about?"
"I've deliberately brought you to a hilltop," he said. "We are very noticeable here, and something is coming to us."
"What, the wind?"
"Not just the wind," he said sternly. "It may seem to be wind to you, because wind is all you know."
I strained my eyes, staring into the desert shrubs. Don Juan stood silently by me for a moment, and then walked into the nearby chaparral and began to tear some big branches from the surrounding shrubs. He gathered eight of them and made a bundle. He ordered me to do the same and to apologize to the plants in a loud voice for mutilating them. When we had two bundles, he made me run with them to the hilltop and lie down on my back between two large rocks. With tremendous speed, he arranged the branches of my bundle to cover my entire body. Then he covered himself in the same manner and whispered through the leaves that I should watch how the so-called wind would cease to blow once we had become unnoticeable. At one moment, to my utter amazement, the wind actually ceased to blow, as Don Juan had predicted. It happened so gradually that I would have missed the change had I not been deliberately waiting for it. For a while, the wind had hissed through the leaves over my face, and then gradually it became quiet all around us. I whispered to Don Juan that the wind had stopped, and he whispered back that I shouldn't make any overt noise or movement because what I was calling the wind was not wind at all, but something that had a volition of its own and could actually recognize us. I laughed out of nervousness. In a muffled voice, Don Juan called my attention to the quietness around us and whispered that he was going to stand up and I should follow him, putting the branches aside very gently with my left hand. We stood up at the same time. Don Juan stared for a moment into the distance toward the south and then turned around abruptly and faced the west.
Sneaky. Really sneaky, he muttered, pointing to an area towards the southwest.
Look, look, he urged me. I stared with all the intensity I was capable of. I wanted to see whatever he was referring to, but I didn't notice anything at all. Or rather, I didn't notice anything I hadn't seen before. There were just shrubs, which seemed to be agitated by a soft wind. They rippled.
It's here, Don Juan said.
At that moment, I felt a blast of air in my face. It seemed that the wind had actually begun to blow after we stood up. I couldn't believe it. There had to be a logical explanation for it. Don Juan chuckled softly and told me not to tax my brain trying to reason it out. Let's go gather the shrubs once more, he said. I hate to do this to these little plants, but we must stop you. He picked up the branches we had used to cover ourselves and piled small rocks and dirt over them. Then, repeating the same movements we had made before, each of us gathered 8 new branches. In the meantime, the wind kept on blowing ceaselessly. I could feel it ruffling the hair around my ears. Don Juan whispered that once he had covered me, I shouldn't make the slightest movement or sound. He very quickly put the branches over my body, and then he lay down and covered himself. We stayed in that position for about 20 minutes, and during that time, a most extraordinary phenomenon occurred. The wind again changed from a hard, continuous gust to a mild vibration. I held my breath, waiting for Don Juan's signal. At a given moment, he gently shoved off the branches. I did the same, and we stood up. The hilltop was very quiet. There was only a slight, soft vibration of leaves in the surrounding chaparral. Don Juan's eyes were fixedly staring at an area in the shrubs south of us.
"There it is again!" he exclaimed in a loud voice.
I involuntarily jumped, nearly losing my balance, and he ordered me in a loud, imperative voice to look. "What am I supposed to see?" I asked desperately. He said that it, the wind, or whatever, was like a cloud or a whorl that was quite a ways above the shrubs, twirling its way to the hilltop where we were. I saw a ripple forming on the bushes in the distance.
"There it comes," Don Juan said in my ear. "Look how it's searching for us."
Right then, a strong, steady gust of wind hit my face as it had hit it before. This time, however, my reaction was different. I was terrified. I hadn't seen what Don Juan had described, but I had seen a most eerie wave rippling the shrubs. I didn't want to succumb to my fear and deliberately sought any kind of suitable explanation. I said to myself that there must be continuous air currents in the area, and Don Juan, being thoroughly acquainted with the whole region, was not only aware of that, but was capable of mentally plotting their occurrence. All he had to do was to lie down, count, and wait for the wind to taper off, and once he stood up, he had only to wait again for its reoccurrence. Don Juan's voice shook me out of my mental deliberations. He was telling me that it was time to leave. I stalled. I wanted to make sure that the wind would taper off.
"I didn't see anything, Don Juan," I said.
"You noticed something unusual, though. Perhaps you should tell me again what I was supposed to see."
"I've already told you," he said. "Something that hides in the wind and looks like a whirl, a cloud, a mist, a face that twirls around."
Don Juan made a gesture with his hands to depict a horizontal and a vertical motion.
"It moves in a specific direction," he went on. "It either tumbles or it twirls. A hunter must know all that in order to move correctly."
I wanted to humor him, but he seemed to be trying so hard to make his point that I didn't dare. He looked at me for a moment, and I moved my eyes away.